Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDSU Extension held meetings across the state this week addressing current problems and developing strategies to handle the state's worsening drought. Today, we dive into those issues that drought is bringing South Dakotans. Joining us now, state climatologist Laura Edwards and livestock business management field specialist Heather Gessner. Laura, welcome.
Hi, Lori.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for being here as well.
You bet.
Laura, let's start with you because I'm looking at two drought maps right now. One is from July 13th and the other is from July 25th, and there's a big change just in that short period of time. Give us an overall perspective on how extreme the drought is right now in the state.
Yeah, so we look at the U.S. Drought Monitor as kind of a pulse on the situation for drought, not just in South Dakota, but across the country. But certainly it's been expanding over the course of the last 2 to 3 months. But the area of extreme drought, what we call extreme drought, is now about 15% of the state, where we had essentially no drought in mid-May. And so I know it's really a tough situation out there, and it's really been an agricultural drought. We haven't seen a whole lot in the way of really significant water restrictions. I know several towns and some water providers have set some water restrictions, but really the agricultural community has been hit the hardest with this year's drought.
And then, Laura, what's this exceptional drought area, which is new as well? What's the difference between an extreme drought and an exceptional drought, and who's that impacting?
Yeah, so extreme drought is about a 1 in 30 year kind of thing. Maybe 3 times in a century would we see a drought of that extreme level on the drought monitor. Right now, actually, we don't have any exceptional drought, but it's just north of us in North Dakota. So we're keeping an eye on the area on the border just in case things get that bad.
All right. So this recently meetings with local farmers and producers throughout the state. Heather, do you want to start with that and tell me what some of the impact on livestock is and what ranchers and producers had to say?
Right. So a lot of what we were seeing and talking to the producers about and what they were telling us was some of the changes that they've already made to their operations. For many of them, they've reduced the cow herd numbers. Some of them indicated selling up to half of their cow-calf pairs already. So as they look forward, they're trying to figure out how are we going to buy feed or maintain enough feed on hand to not only get through the summer, but also the fall and winter months. And, you know, in a worst-case scenario and the drought continues into next year, what are we going to feed in early spring when turnout to pasture might be delayed some more while we're waiting for the grass to recover? You know, they're looking at a lot of those economic situations that are really, really causing a lot of financial crunch, you know, in the way of buying more feed when pasture is already paid for and purchased. And they have that added component of, you know, instead of selling a cash crop of wheat, they ended up baling wheat because of the lack of grain quality that was being there. So they didn't have that income source either.
Heather, is there a sense in certain areas of the state that wildfires could also have a major impact? Are they holding their breath regarding that, or does not that play into this in a different sort of way?
We actually talked to some producers at one of the meetings, and pretty much their afternoon plan was to be ready to go out on fire calls. Just because, you know, any random dry lightning strike, if somebody is careless and throws a cigarette butt out the window, if a train comes through and causes a spark, or even one of those guys hauling precious needed hay out to their operations, if a bearing goes out and causes a, you know, a spark goes out in the ditch, there's all those different reasons that fire might start, and they were very worried about it, and were just starting to put it into their daily plans of attack on what they were going to do that afternoon.
Laura, do you want to weigh in on what some of the things you were hearing from farmers and producers? What are their concerns?
Yeah, I heard a lot of those similar kinds of things. And coincidentally, a lot of the areas that we visited this week are now in that D3 or extreme drought. Almost all the areas got more severe this week. So I think we hit the timing just about right, where folks are making a lot of these decisions right now. Other comments I heard is that it confirmed what they kind of already knew, and just having the opportunity to visit with some SDSU Extension people and some other farmers and ranchers like themselves to kind of get some ideas and suggestions or confirmation on what they might be doing. Also at these meetings, we had representatives from the USDA Farm Service Agency who also talked about their drought disaster programs and what they have available for producers as well during this drought situation.
Where did you visit, Laura?
Where did we visit? Mm-hmm, we visited in Lemon, Faith, Pierre, and Chamberlain this week. About 2 weeks ago or so, we were also in Harriet and Gettysburg. So we've been to six different places so far, and we're keeping it open. You know, if there's a continuing need out there, we will be considering some other meetings in August.
Heather, can you characterize in your travels sort of the mood of farmers and producers? Did you have a sense of how they're, handling this from, a mental standpoint as well as a business standpoint?
Sure. The producers that we talked to, I have mostly been upbeat. They're still in that mindset that, we can get through this and we'll just make management decisions to make some changes. But one of the things that we really encouraged everybody at the meeting to do is continually look at your neighbors and talk to your neighbors, and if they're making decisions that they wouldn't normally make or things that are really, not happening the way one would consider a traditional for that individual, to start talking to each other so that we're really taking that care of our neighbors and our family members as the stress of continued drought would continue to weigh on them and make some of those changes. So the ones that attended the meeting for the most part appeared to be in that, we'll make this happen and what decisions do we need to make and what do we need to know. But, this in a lingering drought situation, that's something that we truly need to watch out for our friends, neighbors, and family.
And Laura, were you seeing any sort of what you might call innovative solutions? Is it pretty much standard practice and a matter of predicting and timing and making difficult decisions? Or are you seeing farmers and producers kind of come up with things that are unique to this situation and this point in time?
Yeah, every drought is different. And the timing of the drought is different all the time. And each time we have a drought, I heard a lot of comments, especially in Chamberlain, comparing to the 2012 drought and how that was quite different. That affected a lot of the corn and soybean production that year. But also prices are a lot different. That year corn was $7, $8, and now it's like $3. And so some of their options and choices are different because of the timing. And we try to encourage through all of our presenters and our discussions some ways that they can do things now that won't hurt them next year or in subsequent years, trying to keep some of the crop residue on the ground to capture snow and keep moisture for next year, and some other herd choices as well and selling choices that Heather mentioned are all good strategies. And it really varies by operation and where they're at, too, around the state.
All right, Laura, you mentioned corn and soybeans. Where are we at in that cycle right now, and how are those crops doing?
It's a tough time for corn if we're in a severe drought right now. I was really worried about a week and a half ago when we were seeing these 100-degree temperatures and pretty dry conditions. Since then, we've gotten some rain in that corn-growing region of the state, which I think is really nice. Some of them got really, 6 inches, in Aurora, Sanborn County. But, this time of year, when corn is tasseling, when it's setting ear, making ears. You know, it needs about a quarter to a third of an inch a day, moisture-wise. So it really is a moisture-critical time for corn. So far, corn has been tracking pretty poorly in crop condition in South Dakota, worse than 2012 right now. So hopefully it can improve and we can get some decent yields out this year.
And soybeans?
And soybeans, yeah, it's another tough year for soybeans. Also tracking relatively poorly across South Dakota. Although soybeans have come back in the past. You know, there are some drought years where soybeans have improved with rains in August. So we'll keep watching that crop because there's some opportunities still for that to get better.
Heather, let's talk about some of the sort of stock pond issues and other things that cattle producers are having, you know, in times of drought. What are some of the struggles that people who aren't in that business might not have considered?
Some of the water issues for livestock, one is if there is water in a pasture, is there enough forage for the cattle to even be there? And so some of those, you know, we both need water and forage in our pastures as we get forward. Some of the big concerns would be livestock suitability tests in the water quality and whether the nitrate and sulfur levels are safe for livestock consumption. It's one of the big tests that the SDSU Extension can do for producers is to look at that number and determine whether it's safe for your livestock to be drinking at all. Another big concern with our water is the blue-green algae that would have potential blooms and kill livestock relatively immediately before you hardly even notice that you have a problem. So those would be two of the big things other than just water quantity availability.
Let's talk about the forecast then. Laura, anything to be optimistic about coming up, or the drought conditions going to continue to get worse?
Yeah, I think you just had the weather forecast just before the segment, and it looks like there's some scattered chances of rain over the next couple days, but overall, temperatures in August look like they're going to be leaning warmer than average. That's true for much of the country, really, but that's something that we're really keeping an eye on, mostly because rainfall forecast for August doesn't look really promising. Even if we get near average rainfall, you know, those warmer temperatures really can suck up that water really quickly, and the plants are really dry, you know, they want the water, so it'll go quickly when we do get some rain. So it's kind of a wait and see game. I think we're kind of going week by week now, looking at the forecasts, but generally looks like it's leaning on the dry side the next couple of weeks.
And Laura, you mentioned sort of this really being something that impacted the ag industry, but maybe not, you know, a few towns here and there, but not everybody. Do you get a sense that the rest of the state just really doesn't take it as seriously as they perhaps should? And if so, what would you have to say about the, you know, sort of ripples of this?
Yeah, I've just heard of essentially voluntary water restrictions by some water providers, maybe some lawn watering restrictions, but nothing really hard set in stone yet. So I think people are aware of the drought, but, you know, our two largest urban areas, Sioux Falls and Rapid City, aren't really in a severe drought situation right now. I haven't gotten a sense that they don't know or don't understand about the drought impact to the state, but I haven't heard a lot of concern from them either. So, but really, it will be affecting our economy, certainly, given this drought year.
Heather, let's leave with some final advice about what decisions are going to be need to be made in the next week or so, and something for those who are listening who are in the business that they might not have considered before today that they should probably start thinking about.
Some of the things I would encourage anyone to start thinking about would be testing any possible forages that they're thinking about cutting for silage or hay. That's not a traditional thing for them, is to get them tested for nitrates. We don't want to be feeding bred cows anything high in nitrates. We'll be losing baby calves, which would then be an economic hardship on us next year. So if we can get some of those forages sent in and tested, that's one of the safest things that we can do right now. And then to continually monitor our water quality so that we're not losing any cattle from any undue stressors from poor water quality as well. So monitoring those things that we don't traditionally use for feeds, and maybe some of those non-typical forages that we're going to be planting, just to make sure that we're not getting any nitrate problems or, you know, causing problems that way.
Laura, any final takeaways that you think a decision should be made the next week or two? What should farmers be looking ahead to?
I just like to emphasize, you know, that we know it's a really severe situation out there, and we understand there's some really tough choices to be made. But that if folks want to share reports on the drought or tell me about impacts, they can email me, or there's also the Drought Impact Reporter website at University of Nebraska that really has a national archive, national database of drought reports, and anyone can submit a drought report there as well, and we'd encourage that. So we hope we have the tools and resources, and we encourage folks to visit igrow.org also to see all that we have to offer from Extension.
All right. Heather Gessner, Laura Edwards, thank you both for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. Thanks.